What's up? You're listening to Bro-Pal, Scott and Todd, Scott Speaks Special Edition. I'll actually take the fall this time. It rarely happens, but this week was my fault. I was out of town for work. God forbid, you gotta travel for work sometimes. And Todd and I did not have a chance to record a pod. Although we did have one of the State of States calls, for those that have been long time listeners of this podcast, you would know that a couple of years ago, I actually used a State of States call audio recording as the podcast for the week. But anyway, it's just a group of buddies that we get together various intervals of time, normally 2 or 3 times a year, and just catch up. Most of us are friends from either high school, or most of us know each other from college or older or beyond. Just a good group of guys. It's the same people that went to Breckenridge back in October, which I know we talked about on this very podcast. So a couple of times, actually. So we did have that call on Wednesday, even though I was out of town. I took it from my rental car because I was driving. I'll save that story for the next podcast, but that was a disaster. I'll save the whole story about that for a different podcast, because tonight I actually have something, and I thought of this several days ago, that I decided I want to talk about that I think will be of general interest to most of you. At least I hope it will. And I think it'll be of pretty specific interest to some of you. I might even be able to tell some people about this and get them to listen. Like, people that don't normally listen may have never listened to one of my podcasts. I might get them to tune in, because tonight I'm going to run through my gambling story, my history. And it's interesting, gambling is specifically poker, but gambling has been a part of my life for 25 years now. Definitely more than 20 years. And I very rarely talk about it on the podcast. I mean, occasionally I do, but not in depth at all. So knowing that this would be a Scott Speaks week, I figured this was a good chance to really kind of tell the full story, kind of soup to nuts with highlights and lowlights and all that sort of stuff. So strap in, sit back, relax, and I'm going to run through that. I will say tonight's episode of Scott Speaks here on the BroPod Network is sponsored by Dr. Pepper Zero Sugar Blackberry. New flavor out there. Just bought a 12-pack tonight. As most of you know, I never buy cans of soda. But my local grocer only had the blackberry flavor in cans. So kind of read it or weep. That doesn't make any sense. No, kind of take it or leave it. Not read it or weep. Or read it and weep. Neither one. Sorry, I had to take a sip of a beverage. That actually isn't that, because I didn't open a can to do this show. But anyway, I will say, first impression, I thought it was very good. It's reminiscent of, to me, of grape soda, something that I have not had to drink in a number of years. And even before that, I very rarely would drink grape soda. But that's what the flavor profile reminds me of on the Dr. Pepper Blackberry. So obviously, they have it in fully leaded sugar form. And also, obviously, I got the Zero brand or version, but it's pretty good. It's pretty tasty. So, proud sponsor tonight's pod. Thanks for coming on board as a sponsor and keeping the BroPod Network alive. We do appreciate it. Anyway, so tonight, my gambling story, my poker story. And again, I thought of this when I was in my hotel in Tampa. Don't know why I thought of it then, but I just did. Because I was thinking specifically about a place that I used to play back in, I was just looking at this. The first time I played there was in 2012. And so I only played there a couple of years. I mean, I started early in 2012. First game was April, I think. Yeah, April 5th, 2012. And then the last time I played there was April 28th, 2014. So only played there 2 years, but it really made an impression on me because it was just a wild, wild situation. So I'll talk more in depth about that in a minute. I'm going to start with a brief history. By the way, I should say all of the names that I'm going to be mentioning during this podcast and all of the locations, in terms of the kind of private games, the you know, personal games, not the actual casinos, because I'll mention casinos and cities by name, but all the private games, to the best of my knowledge, no longer exist. None of them. So I don't feel like I'm like giving anyone up. Also, most of the names that I'm going to mention, I don't know anyone's last name, so I'm just kind of saying someone's first name. So it's not that, you know, provocative or, oh, you shouldn't have said that. I just wanted to clarify that when people start writing me emails. Scott, I can't believe you gave up. And relax. Okay, relax. I didn't give up anybody's name. And I do none like that. Chill out, please. Chill out, please. Anyway, so, So I started gambling, and I'll refer to it as gambling. Again, most of this will be poker, but I'll still refer to it as gambling. I started gambling legally as a 21 or older individual, I guess right around the turn of the century, because that's when I turned 21. Was in the year 2000, I turned 21. I keep stats. I have a giant graph that I pulled up and I'm looking at. I started keeping stats in my graph here in 2006. So I've got almost 20 years of data here. But I know I was playing before that because I look at some of the games that I've listed here and I'm like, well, what about when I played in this place or played in that place? So I definitely started playing technically in college. I mentioned on the last podcast, and I forgot his name, but his name was Telly. The last Scott Speaks, at least, when I talked about the famous donut heist of 2000 or 2001, whatever that was, that I was playing poker then. And certainly I played poker, and I remember even playing like home versions of blackjack. My good friend Heather Van Summeren, shout out Heather, or some of her friends were having a, what do you call it, like a crawfish boil, and they had a blackjack table. And one of the guys there, I guess he was a little better off than I certainly was, because I was like 23, 24, was acting as the house and dealing blackjack and playing blackjack. And you could buy in for, you know, 40 or 50 bucks. And if you won, he was paying you. And if you lost, so be it. But like stuff like that, I don't have those stats anywhere. I mean, I'm looking at the earliest year of my sheet, and which again is 2006. And I'm pretty sure that was like 03, 04, maybe 05, that exact thing happened. So in any event, and I also know for a fact as I look at this, because I list the date, where I played, what I bought in for, what I cashed out for, and then the game that I played. And so I can tell you, there's one example, but for the most part, it's cash game, you know, 1-2, 1-3, whatever. But when I very first started playing poker, I was playing limit poker, and that's not listed here. So all that to say, there are definitely stats here that are missing. But I will also say that I bet the combined variance of those stats is a couple hundred dollars, maybe between $1,000 and $2,000 from the 20 years that I do have numbers for, which definitely the numbers get much bigger, you know, as the years go on. So whatever. All that to say that I used to play little tiny home games, tiny $10 tournaments, $20 tournaments. That isn't listed here. But what I do have is all these home games, all these, you know, again, 2006, I was still an auditor at Resurgent back in that day. I was traveling a lot. So just looking at the 2006 tab as an example, the very first game I have listed here is Dan and Shelley's. That was a married couple that hosted games. Very nice people. They actually live now in Colorado Springs. But very, very nice couple that hosted games, you know, provided snacks. Like they were, it was awesome. Very friendly environment. And it was just $20 tournament. And then they'd have, you know, kind of cash games afterwards. Again, statute of limitations. That was not legal at the time, but no one knows who those two people are unless they're listening. And this was years ago, so we're fine. But then also I have Kansas City, which I'm sure I went there for an audit. I have Tahoe, a couple more Dan and Shelley's, Buffalo, Detroit, St. Louis. I have one sports bet. I track my sports betting as well. I have Columbia. I'm not even sure what the Columbia game was in 2006. I have Scott Hartman, RIP. He hosted a game at his house, a friend of mine, coworker at Resurgent. A couple more Dan and Shelley's. L.A., Vegas, Mike's. I think I know who Mike is. I think it's my friend from Columbia, but I'm not 100% sure. Buffalo, Louisville, Buffalo, Minneapolis, Dan and Shelley. Atlantic City, Buffalo, St. Louis. I went, clearly for my job, I went to Buffalo and St. Louis and Minneapolis a lot. St. Louis again. Dan and Shelley, L.A. And then on 12-16, I have Wade Hampton, which I'll talk about a little more a couple of times, Buffalo, Columbia, whatever. The Wade Hampton game, which again, that's the first sighting of that game on December 16th, 2006. The Wade Hampton game was in a fireworks warehouse, the front room. They turned it into just on Saturday nights. I guess they also did like a Tuesday night game, but and that's where I met, for those that follow him, the Trooper 97. Real name is Tim, who's a guy that lives out in Vegas, does a daily vlog. Check out his vlog. It's pretty interesting. Trooper 97 vlog. Because he dealt that game and played it occasionally. And just a real nice guy, so we became pretty fast friends. And a bunch of other people. I ended up going to a lot of other games because of that game. That game was also kind of insane. Could get a little off the rails. There would be times when they'd have girls from the local strip club serving drinks. So that was the cool... Everyone knows I don't drink alcohol, but that was one of the coolest things about that game for me, is that they had like free snacks and sodas. And I was like, this is amazing. And they also served alcohol because they were taking a rake, which made it an illegal game, of course. But it was just a fun way to play poker. I mean, I'm looking at my 2007 sheet. June 23rd, Wade Hampton. June 30th, Wade Hampton. July 3rd, Wade Hampton. July 8th, Wade Hampton. July 14th, Wade Hampton. July 22nd, Wade Hampton. I was playing basically every week. And that was just one of those places that, like, I think back, and this is what made me think to do this podcast tonight. I think back to the dumb shit I did as a kid. When I went to that game, of course, you have to be invited. You have to know someone. And I did know someone. I went straight from a party, kind of a coworker's holiday party, on December 16th to that game. And I walked in, and that was it. I was in. I met the guy that was running it. He now knows me. That's just how those underground games worked, man. You go in, you shake hands, and boom, you're off. And honestly, that was one of the first games I think I ever played where it started to be pretty serious money. I mean, I look at some of these numbers, you know, my 2006 stats tab. Until that game, that night on December 16th, most of my buy-ins were for small tournaments, $20. I mean, I'm looking here, $20, $40, $60. There's $100. I bought in for $500 in St. Louis once. You know, $300 in Tahoe, So there are examples where, you know, it was over $100, but the majority of my 2006 buy-in numbers were under $100. And that's, I just laugh about it now, because if I go to, let's say, just a couple of years ago stats, virtually none of those. In fact, if I go to 2019 stats, all of them were well over $100. Well. And that includes some real small games, like home games. 2018, same thing. I mean, the buy-ins were all hundreds of dollars, if not thousands of dollars, you know. My Vegas 18 trip, I bought in for almost $8,000 total. That's over 5 or 6 days, of course. Tahoe 2018, bought in for $3,800. So, it's fun and wild to think back to just how different it got. It's not that I'm, you know, obviously I'm making more money, so I have a little more expendable income, but it's not like my mindset has changed. I still go in to all gambling experiences, whether it's poker or table games or whatever, with the objective of winning. That's always what I'm trying to do. I'd be insane not to have that as my objective. But anyway, so that was kind of a game changer. December 16th, 2006. Suddenly I'm playing cash games where I'm buying in for a couple or a few hundred dollars. That was unusual for me. So, anyway, so, but let me also say, let me back up a little bit more, in case anyone's curious. I genuinely don't know who taught me the game of poker. I would assume it was someone in my family or a friend. I don't know. All of my interests started before the Moneymaker effect, before the movie Rounders came out. Like, I was already in by then. In fact, when Rounders came out, I was dating a girl at the time, because I remember we went to the movie. I was in college. We went to the theater on a Sunday before I drove back to Clemson and watched, and I was like, that movie was awesome. Because it was. Good movie. What up, Mike D? Anyway, so he's a character in the film. But yeah, I was already interested at that point. I didn't need Chris Moneymaker winning the World Series Poker main event or Rounders to entice me to want to take part in playing cards. I was already in. But ironically, probably until around when I started tracking this, and you can actually see it in some of these stats in the early years, although it happens far less now. But ironically, I really just wanted to play blackjack. That's the first time I ever went to Vegas. That's all I wanted to do was play blackjack. And that's all I did was play blackjack. And I look at some of these, again, early stats. Tahoe 2006, all I did was play blackjack. That blows my mind, because now all I would do is play poker. I would not touch blackjack. Buffalo 2006, blackjack. Detroit 2006, blackjack. Now, later in 2006, I had some numbers here where it's blackjack and poker. Louisville, blackjack and poker. LA, Hollywood Park, blackjack and poker. Sorry, that's poker and blackjack. I don't know if that means anything or not, because these are obviously very old stats. But then when you get to 2007 and kind of move forward, there's a couple in 2007 that are blackjack. Let's see, 2008 was literally all poker. 2009, all poker. So, well, there's one blackjack session in Detroit. So again, occasionally, I would still jump back into the original siren that had me in the gambling world. But in those nights, I mean, I remember plenty of nights at MGM specifically in Vegas. This would have been probably 2004, 2005. I would sit there all night and play blackjack. But I'd only bought in for like $200. So even though I may have, at the end of the night or early morning, lost all my money and had to slink back to my room, you know, defeated, I just played for 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 hours for $200 in Vegas. That's a win. That is a win. And for those that don't understand, like, to only lose $200, that's a winning session as far as I'm concerned. That's just the price of the entertainment. So, and, you know, I probably got Well, at that point in time, if it was 2004, I probably got 15 Cokes with cherries in them. Because I was an unassigned caffeine addict. But anyway, so again, I started playing blackjack in the early 2000s and playing poker on the side, just with friends, tiny games. You know, $10 tournaments, $20 cash games where you buy in for 20 and you might walk away with 10, you might walk away with 25. And that was the sum total of your wins and losses. But again, like I said, Wade Hampton, 2006, that's when I started getting into more serious cash games. 2007, bunch of cash games, bunch of Wade Hampton. I already mentioned that. And then late 2007? No, it looks like it was 2008. I started playing at Luke's. Shout out to Luke, good friend. Luke held a game at his house, and that was all coworkers from Resurgent. But again, even smaller, nickel and dime stuff. I mean, I look at the buy-ins from March 27th to May 9th. I played at Luke's 7 times in a row. March 27th, April 3rd, April 10th, April 17th, April 24th, like clockwork. May 1st, May 9th. Games normally on Thursdays. Buy-ins, 20, 40, 10, 10, 10, 10, and 50. That's what we were talking about here in terms of the buy-ins. And over those 7 sessions, I combined winnings $143.50. So like very small stakes. But again, I also look at this stuff and I'm like, I look at some of these names and it just brings back, I played at Melinda. Shout out to Melinda. She used to host a game, or rather her father and stepmother would host a game. Again, super nice people, lovely people would, you know, come in. They always had food ready, beverages, whatever you want. Just the nicest people in the world. And they would have tournaments. It looks like, based on what I'm looking at, either a $50 or a $60 buy-in. And I cleaned up on those games. I mean, I love Melinda. And Melinda's a funny story. I was playing poker, not blackjack, poker at MGM back in, I believe, 2007? Maybe 2006? Somewhere in there. We'll say it was 2007. And she just happened to be... She just happened to be at the same table and mentioned Greenville. I was like, really? You're from Greenville? The rest is history. She was like, yeah, I host a game. You should come out. Like, the whole thing. It was crazy. Like, just one of those small world type things. And then before you know it, I'm playing at her house. But I don't have an easy way to do this. But I guarantee you, if I added up, summed up all the times I played at Melinda's house, whether it was poker, I mean, whether it was tournament or cash, I'm up pretty big at that game. I mean, I'm just kind of glancing. There's only one or two Melinda sessions that didn't go well for me. So in addition to being lovely people, I really like going to that game because I did well. Now, in the world of doing well, and man, 2009, I played at Melinda's 1, 2, 3, 4. I played there all the time. That was kind of crazy. But talking about places where I cleaned up, no place was better than Holly Tree. Now, Holly Tree is a golf course in the greater Greenville, maybe Simpsonville, probably Simpsonville area. And for a very brief, unfortunately very brief period of time, I got invited from my old boss, initially invited me there to play. First time I played was March of 2009. And I played there 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, I think just 8 times. Because then the game just kind of fell apart, stopped being played. I never lost. These were guys who would play golf and then come in and play poker. They were terrible, and I never lost. And I was so sad when that game kind of dried up. I was hoping and praying that it would reopen, and it just never really did. So that was a shame, but... that was, again, also one of the most, if not perhaps in my entire 20 years of keeping records, the most profitable game that I ever played was Holly Tree. But anyway, again, we'll get to the point of why I wanted to do this, and I'm just kind of clicking through and remembering. Somewhere around, was it 2010 that I first played there? Yeah. 2010, I got invited to a game in Clinton. Clinton, South Carolina was about a 35-minute drive from my house. And this was another one. I don't exactly remember how I got invited to that one. Probably from people I knew from the Wade Hampton game. Not 100% sure. Anyway, but the Clinton game was at a guy. Again, I hesitate to use names even though I know it's so far beyond statute of limitations. But there was a guy, very nice guy. All these people I'm talking about, by the way, except for maybe one who I have not mentioned yet, were all super nice people. But there was a guy who had a side business, let's just say, and he ran the game out of his warehouse, in which he also ran a side business. And same thing, free sodas, free whatever. He would have a tournament. Tournament started, I think, at 5 or 6, and then cash afterwards. And I think the tournament was every other week. And so sometimes I'd get confused on if it was a tournament week or not. I typically did not play the tournament. I just wanted to show up to play cash. That's where I first really started playing PLO, which is bad. It's a bad game to get into. But I will say, that Clinton game did not treat me well. I oftentimes would lose quite a bit of money in that Clinton game. In fact, the year that I probably played that one the most was 2011. Yeah, we'll say it was 2011. And 2011 was a rough year for gambling for me. And no, I'm not going to give any exact numbers because it just doesn't matter. But there were a lot of nights at Clinton where, here, October 6, 2011, buy-in for $380, cash out for $32. That's not good. That's not a good result. September 8th, 2011, buy-in for $300, cash out for $0. August 11th, 2011, buy-in for $440, cash out for $0. These are all at the Clinton game. So again, it's no fault of anyone but me. Do better, Scott. Play better. This is probably the worst one ever. Clinton, April 30th, 2011, buy-in for $580, cash out $0. So point is, there were games like that everywhere, all the time. All the time. I was constantly playing in these home games. I think it was 2009. Yeah. In 2009, I have 70 entries into my gambling tracker. That means I played. Now, some of them are like at Melinda's. I'd play, we'd get there and play cash for a bit, and then we play a tournament. So there'd be two in one night. So it doesn't necessarily mean that I played more than every single week, but it probably does. It probably means that, and I'm kind of just glancing, I don't see any stretch of time where I didn't play multiple times. And there's not, I just glanced through the whole thing. There's not a single month that I didn't play. I played every single month. I think the most substantial was maybe May, or no, it was January. January, I played 13 different events. Melinda's, Luke's, played at Charnez's house. Luke's again, Melinda, Charnez, Luke, and then there's a Dan and Shelley in there as well. So 2009 was a busy year. But again, we're all leading up to the whole reason I thought of this, which was 2012. So I'd been introduced, again, I'm not sure how, to some guys. And in 2012, we started playing a game. It ran every Monday, and sometimes they'd run it on Saturday, too. And it was at the, it was in this garage area near a dentist's office in Greenville. And so we called the place, we called the location, The Cavity. What a great name. Wonderful name. And what got me thinking about this the other night when I was in Florida is that, so again, that game run by very nice guys. You know, I know I keep saying that, but I feel like I need to. It's not like it's a criminal organization. No, these are all nice guys. But you have to keep in mind, in every single place that I've talked about, what's the one thing in common? I'm asking this question as if I have a live studio audience. I'll tell you. The one thing in common with all of these places is that a lot of people were walking around with a lot of cash. Everybody had a bunch of cash. If you come in and buy in for 100 or 200 bucks and you might have to rebuy it, well, you better show up with $400 or $500. And it got to a point where everybody knew if they were going to this game that everyone was walking around with a bunch of cash. So inherently, there's always some risk. And that's why that Wade Hampton game, the fireworks place, got robbed. There was a game I didn't mention. He's probably the one person who wasn't actually a nice guy. His name was Teddy. Probably the most sketchy game I ever played at. And I played it a few times. He also had slot machines, which, again, if you grew up in South Carolina or know anything about South Carolina law, totally illegal. That game got robbed. I played there a few times. Now I say this, I should caveat, I was never there when any of these places got robbed, but they got robbed, and that's scary. I mean, look at this. Teddy's, I played May 25th, May 29th is 2008. May 30th, June 6th, June 20th, June 20th, the day before my birthday, I played at Teddy's. I lost $500. July 4th, literally July 4th. That's crazy to me. August 16th was the last time I played at Teddy's. I didn't play there too much because it really, truly was sketchy. But the point is, these places would get robbed. And as a result, even the Cavity, there was discussion about ways to make it more secure. Because, again, it was one table game. An email was sent out. You had to be one of the first 9 people on the list. If you weren't, you'd be put on the waiting list. But in order to always have a game, sometimes you need to invite some people that you don't know as well as the other people that typically play that game. So in order to do that, there was a risk. I don't know this guy. I don't know that guy. And so occasionally, you know, normally you'd show up and you knew everybody. But occasionally you'd show up and there'd be a new person. Now, if it's a person I'm bringing, I feel fine because I inherently trust that person. I wouldn't bring them. I only brought Pete. I don't think I ever took Tommy to that game, but I only brought Pete. But if I ever brought anyone else, or I'm sorry, if someone else brought someone else, I don't know that guy. I don't know anything about him. And so I remember there was a discussion one time while the game was going on. We've been playing for a few hours, and they're like, maybe we should put a camera up because you kind of walked. It was on the second floor. It was above a garage, I think I mentioned that, of a dentist's office. And so there was like a staircase on the side of the building, and you'd walk up, and you'd knock on the door, and someone would have to let you in. And you could see over the door, like the door had one of those glass half domes that you could see through to see who it is. But, you know, the idea was, well, what if someone knocks on the door, someone goes to open, of course, I always kept it locked, someone goes to open it, and there's either no one there or they're covering their face. Like, what do we do? How do we protect us? How do we protect the money that we have? That, whatever. And it was talked about, and several people at the game, again, there's only 8 or 9 of us, were like, well, you know, obviously I'd pull out my gun. And that's when in that moment, I realized, oh, I might be the only one not packing right now. If I'm not the only one, half the room or close to half the room has guns in this place. And again, even that didn't stop me from continuing to play because I moved to Denver end of May 2014. The last time I played the Cavity was April 28th, 2014. So I played right up until the end. You know, I was there all the way to the bitter end. So it just, you know, it's just one of those things that, and again, thinking back to Teddy's game, guaranteed people had guns. Thinking back to the Wade Hampton game, people certainly had guns because this is South Carolina. People carried guns. But you just, I shouldn't say you, I just, it was never a fear. No one ever feared it. It was just part of playing the game, I guess is the best way to say that. So anyway, I don't, I don't know what the real point was there other than to say that that game was, again, hit me in the pocketbook. And it's funny, I think about that. I'm like, okay, which games did I beat? I beat Melinda's game. I beat a guy named KT. He had a game a few times a year. Definitely beat his game. Definitely beat Luke's game, but super small stakes, so who cares? But all the big games I played, Wade Hampton definitely beat me. The Cavity beat me. And again, even Teddy's game, unfortunately, beat me as I look at the stats. And so it's like, what? It's fair to say, well, then what do you get out of it, Scott? Why do you play? Why do you gamble if you're a lifetime loser? And I am a lifetime loser in gambling. In poker, I'm probably a lifetime loser, but nowhere near as much a lifetime loser as I am with gambling. And what I mean by that, for those that aren't aware, I need to update my sheet because I have no way of doing this right now. But if I were to look at my lifetime blackjack results, my lifetime Mississippi stud results, God knows, my lifetime anything but poker results, it's probably 85% of the lifetime negative impact on my financial situation. So I think I am lifetime down in poker, but nowhere near as much as I am lifetime down in other games, which is relevant. Sorry for yawning. Which is relevant because it just says, Scott, if you just stuck to what you know you're good at, where there is no house edge, where you are just playing the other person, you'd be doing a lot better. You would have given up a lot less money. Don't be a dumbass. Fair. I get it. I hear you loud and clear. So anyway, so that's kind of my gambling story. Now, I skipped a number of years. I know I went off on some specific places and locations that I played. I get that. But I will say that in terms of my gambling story, quote unquote, you know, I still love it. I don't get to play as much as I used to. You know, with my new job, I travel a lot, but I'm traveling to Salt Lake City. Not option to play there. I will start to travel more to other places, and I play when I can. And there are places that you can play here locally in the Denver area. And it's about an hour from my house, but I'll go a couple times a year. I look at my 2019 stats. I went three times. 2020 stats. I went one, two times. Well, that was pandemic, so that's kind of dumb. 2021, I went one, two, three times. So, and it's funny too. I'm looking now at that stuff. I have a lot of Donk House entries. Donk House was an online thing that I played a lot during the pandemic. And that was another one that was kind of an ATM for me. I'm really sad to see that one go. I mean, literally, I'm looking at this. There's a loss. But for like, I'd win like six or seven in a row and then lose a little. Win six or seven in a row, lose a little. God, I wish that game was still going. That was great fun. And you play from the convenience of your home. But I digress. I still love playing. I play as much as I can. I will never stop playing, I don't think, playing poker. I still like going to Vegas. Tommy, Pete, and I still try to do an annual trip. We were talking about it earlier about doing it this October or somewhere around there. So, again, it still scratches my itch. But it's just so funny and so interesting to look back at these old places, first of all, to just bring me back to, oh man, I remember doing that. I remember going to that, you know. And then even more so than that, looking back and just remembering, this sounds bad, but, you know, there would be days or there would be times where I would go and play a game, whether it was at a legitimate casino or a home game, and I lose $300-$400. And I'd be driving home just like, what the fuck am I doing? Just feeling so stupid and so defeated And to think back on that compared to now, like, and again, it sounds terrible to say, but if I lose $300 or $400, it's like a cost of doing business, you know? But back then, and again, even those days I talked about earlier in the pod, MGM playing blackjack for 6-7 hours. There was one time, I'll kind of close with this. There was a time that I finished playing about 6:30 in the morning. Finished playing, meaning I ran out of money, 6:30 a.m. And the pit boss had been watching me. He'd been friendly. We'd been talking most of the night. He was like, let me get you breakfast. Go to the buffet, get yourself a free breakfast. And he wrote a ticket out and gave me, you know, got free breakfast out of it. Now, back then, this would have been 04, 05 at the latest. Back then, a breakfast was probably, at that buffet, the MGM Grand Buffet, was probably $40. So in reality, I had lost, and I could be wrong about the number that I bought in for, but let's say I'd lost $200 gambling. And he gave me $40 as a rebate, essentially, to go get some food. Now, first of all, I will say Vegas doesn't do that anymore. They rarely do. You have to be a mega high roller to get even something like that, like a free breakfast. Or they have to really mess up or mess you up somehow. But just like those were the innocent days when I was crestfallen that I had lost $200. And just that breakfast, I was like, whew. And it's, you know, I think back, and I don't think this is true, but it's like, is that one reason why I was like, all right, there are good people in the gambling community. I'll continue gambling. I don't know. Maybe that is one reason, maybe it isn't, but it's a memory that 20 years later I still have. I know that much. But now, you know, if I go to, again, it's kind of a tradition I started for myself. If I go around my birthday, not on my birthday necessarily, well, I think my birthday is a Saturday this year, so I might go on my birthday. Anyway, if I go on my birthday up to Monarch, which is my casino of choice here locally in the Denver area, and play cards for 8 or 9 hours, I'll take $2,000 with me. And if 25-year-old me knew what 45-year-old me was doing and that's where I'd be, where I wouldn't, or I'm not even thinking about taking $2,000 in cash, it's been an interesting ride. It's been a fun ride, certainly. And look, even knowing my lifetime stats, and that's on here, I won't share it with anyone because it's no one's business, but even knowing my lifetime stats, still, as I mentioned at the outset, I'm always trying to get better. I'm always trying to improve my game. And every time I go out, I'm trying to win. Every single time that I go out, I want to win. I want desperately to win. And I am still looking at it as a very long-term game, pun intended, where no matter how much I'm down lifetime, according to my graph, I want to eat away at that. And, you know, whenever I retire from my career, poker is something I plan to do as a pastime, as a hobby, and I plan to continue eating away at that deficit for as long as I can. And hopefully, before I leave this world, I can turn it into a positive. And that way, when I am laying on my deathbed, I can say, well, at least I got the casinos and the fellow players throughout the many, many years, and I made money off of them. Even if I'm up $1, I'll be okay with that, because that counts. That's a win. I made $1, and I had hours and hours and hours of entertainment. Heartbreak, sure. Riveting moments, of course. But it'll all be part of it, part of the game. So, anyway, that's my gambling story. If there's questions, let me know. TheBroPodNetwork@gmail.com. TheBroPodNetwork@gmail.com. Shoot me an email. Any of you that listen to this that have a part, played a part in any of those places that I played, I'd love to hear it. I'll talk about it on a future pod. If you send me something at TheBroPodNetwork@gmail.com. TheBroPodNetwork@gmail.com. Of course, check out our website at BroPodNetwork.com. And slide into our DMs on Instagram or X at @the_bro_pod. And yeah, that's it. Like, subscribe, share, tell a friend, spread the word. Hopefully episodes like this will continue to pique the interest of people, especially if you're part of my gambling world or have been over the years. You know who you are. I might even reach out to people and say, hey, you might want to give us a listen. I talk about gambling, specifically poker, throughout the years. Walk down memory lane for some of those people. Anyway, regardless. Listen, this has been Scott Speaks, My Gambling Story. I do appreciate you listening this far, if you made it this far, and I know that you did because you're hearing this. So, I thank you as always for listening, and until next week, everybody,
see you.